So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringsteen.com. And by the way, folks, if you want to check out LouisvillePolitics.com, go ahead and join our email list and our RSS feed, and we will keep you up to date with everything we've got doing automatically. It doesn't cost you a dime. Check it out. Join us and see what's really going on in the world today. In the meantime, welcome back to our good friend, Mr. Ed Martin. How are you, sir?
Yeah, Marco Polo Martin, huh?
I'm telling you, man. I tell you, I didn't know you were making all that money. You go on vacation all the time. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I wish they were vacations. I was in Arizona. I landed. 2 hours later, I was doing a presentation, shake a few hands, get back to the hotel room, get up the next morning, fly back.
I hear you. Well, it's rough when you're trying to work so hard for the business that Barack Obama built.
Don't even get me started. Actually, we just got before this. Before I just picked up my daughter on the way home, I was at my CPA's office dropping off all my paperwork. Like, yeah, I procrastinate. There's no big hurry. I almost never get anything back. But the hardest part about Arizona is it was sunny in 82.
Oh, man.
And the place where I had to do my presentation was about three blocks away from where the hotel I was staying at. Guy looked at me and said, you want us to get you a taxi? And I said, dude, it's 82 degrees. It's sunny. I'm walking.
No doubt, for three blocks.
That was it. I got three blocks worth of some of those beautiful weather I've seen for a while, and then and it was hotel rooms and meeting rooms and airplanes, sold out airplanes, I might add. And I'm a big guy, so that means I'm squished in. So, you know, doing what you got to do, try to make money, and then send, you know, 40 cents out of every dollar you make to the government. And even at that, it's not enough, but, you know, we just keep going. So we don't know any other way, and the government counts on that. We business people don't know any other way.
Well, yes, they do. The government does count on that. We thank you on behalf of Uncle Sam and Barack Obama. You know, but also thank you on behalf of Barbara Shanklin, News in Louisville. And before we even get started on this, folks, I've got to point this out. I don't know how many of you guys are actually paying attention to the NCAA tournament. I'm a big college basketball fan. And congratulations go out to the Louisville Cardinals for making the Final Four. But I've got to tell you, there was some great news today that came out about Kevin Ware. He's a sixth man for Louisville Cardinals, and he had the most horrific injury I think I have ever seen in their game yesterday. They were playing Duke. Kevin Ware came down on his right leg at a weird angle and broke his leg, bone stuck out. You can look it up on YouTube, Kevin Ware injury. I'm not going to get into a lot of detail on it. But I tell you what, they did surgery last night for 2 hours. For you guys who haven't heard the update yet, they did 2 hours worth of surgery last night to repair the leg, put a rod in it and everything else. But they say that this should not be a career-threatening injury to Kevin Ware. He's going to have one real long rehab, about 6 to 8 months. But they compared the injury to that of Joe Theismann and Michael Bush, which were two of the worst injuries I've seen to that point. And so, you know, good luck, Kevin Ware. Thanks for all you did for the Cardinals this year. And I tell you what, man, the Cardinals really stepped it up in the second half last night because they just destroyed Duke. It was incredible. It was incredible.
22 points, and that's a tough – and hats off to CBS. I know they could have played that over and over and over, but they just said, you know, they just flat out said, we're not, you know, they showed it twice trying to identify the player, you know, and all the confusion. And then they said, okay, that's it. We are not showing that again. They could have.
Well,
you know,
they really could have.
Played the shock and awe in, but they didn't. They shelved it and went on with it.
Well, you know, it was really interesting, too. I mean, it took them forever to even show the replay. You know, it was interesting because I'm sitting here watching the game, and Louisville goes and inbounds the ball from this three-point shot that Duke had shot. And, you know, they went to inbound the ball. Next thing I know, I see three Cardinals go down, you know, to the floor on their hands and knees. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? This is after the ball was inbounded. I'm like, what in the hell?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's like, what am I laying around for? Is this some
I was like, you know, did they all hit their heads going up to the basket or something? Because I didn't see anybody hit anybody. And, you know, it was pretty interesting because they all went to the ground. And you saw Kevin Ware laying out of bounds on the sideline at that point. You know, and I saw Kevin Ware go down. So I thought maybe Kevin Ware just bumped himself or something. And so they stopped play at that point, you know, to give him time to get up, get a sub in or something. But they just stayed out there, and then they showed a close-up of these guys crying. And what was really, I tell you, I am not a Duke Blue Devils fan either. I can't stand the Duke Blue Devils. Never have been able to stand the Duke Blue Devils. Never have been able to stand Coach K. A lot of it has to go with the Kentucky-Duke game and the whole Christian Lattner fiasco many years ago. But I've got to tell you, they did switch the cameras. Thornton, who plays for Duke, they switched to him, and he was in tears, walking away with a cringe on his face too, as soon as it happened. And Coach K was visibly upset, and I learned a newfound respect for Duke last night too, because you know they were visibly shaking and upset and worried about Kevin Ware as much as the Louisville players were, and you've got to give them props for that. That was a pretty good thing to see, the sportsmanship. You know, we all sit here and it's all about the win, and even us. I mean, I try to win everything I do. And, you know, even with that, there's more to life than the game itself. And, you know, it was really interesting to see. But thank God Kevin Ware's okay. I didn't mean to spend this much time on this, but I tell you what, it was a very traumatic thing for a lot of people. Kevin
Ware. Yeah, it's big news in Louisville. And, you know, and they say amazingly, it looks like it may have turned the overall number one rank into also the sympathetic favorite for a lot of people now, because it's, you know, they're going, I was thinking about it today, it's like that, they're going remember the Titans kind of deal right now. It's like, wow, not only are they playing the best ball, far and away the best defense, but Damn! Now they're working a Hollywood script almost.
Oh yeah, they really are. And I tell you what, it was really interesting too, because I mean the video of this thing was on YouTube pretty quick. I mean, as soon as they went to halftime, I immediately went online to look at it, to get a close up look at it again, because they only showed the replay one time and he didn't really get to see it very quick in slow motion. So I went to YouTube and it was already up. You know, so you could really see what happened. But it was, you know, I tell you, up to that point, I was looking at UK versus Duke Part 2, except this time it was U of L versus Duke. Well, that game was one of those back-and-forth games. You just knew it was going to come down to a last-second kind of a situation like UK and Duke did many years ago. It was so controversial. And, you know, but them Cards, man, they got excited. But there was a great pitcher of Kevin Ware laying flat on a stretcher on the ground, surrounded by his teammates. And he grabbed all their hands and said, "I'm not dead. Go win this game." And, you know, that was courageous. It was classy. And Godspeed to Kevin Ware, regardless of basketball or anything else. Godspeed to that young man, because he laid it all out. And, you know, I hope his career is okay.
Now it's time for U of L to finish crushing your opponents for two more games. That's what they say.
Now, let's get on to what we do best. Let's talk politics. Let's talk what's really going on. And speaking of crushing your opponents, Barbara Shanklin, yes. For you guys in Louisville, you're very aware that I was the one who was primarily responsible for nailing Judy Green, the late Judy Green, getting her impeached from office for ethical behavior. We needed that case so bad, and the reason I fall so hard on that was to set a precedent so we could hold other elected people accountable. Well, Barbara Shanklin's ethics case came back March 14th, and the Ethics Commission found her guilty and recommends she be removed from the Metro Council. Well, today, Aubrey Williams, this guy's a joke, I can't stand him, but her attorney, Aubrey Williams, filed a 4-page petition in Jefferson Circuit Court, you know, trying to get them to throw this Ethics Commission thing out. Said it was based on errors of law and any fact. But anyway, so this is going to be back in the news for a while. From what I understand, Barbara Shanklin did not show up at the Metro Council meeting Thursday night, this past Thursday night. It was a regularly scheduled Metro Council meeting. She is a paid Metro Council member at this time, and she still gets paid whether she's there or not. But she didn't show up for a meeting because they were supposed to discuss that. There have been 5 Metro Council members who have signed the petition to have her removed from office. 3 Democrats, 2 Republicans. Out of the remaining 20 Metro Council members, they will act as a jury in her case when they bring this before the full Metro Council for the hearing. And it will take 11 to get her impeached. So as it stands right now, regardless of whatever Barbara Shanklin's name is playing in court with Aubrey Williams, that does not affect the Louisville Metro Council proceedings whatsoever. You know, do you think the Ethics – I mean, honestly, do you think the Ethics Commission erred? Did the Ethics Commission make any errors at all? Because I don't see it. I saw this case.
I don't think so. I mean, maybe everything wasn't done absolutely perfect, but I don't think there's any procedural errors or anything that's going to cause them a problem with the impeachment. But, you know, again, if we speak in terms of political class and stuff, it's like, look, she did what she did. There's plenty of charges, plenty of news. You know, at some point, quit having Aubrey file all this paperwork. You know, he filed a 4-page motion or whatever. Probably cost the taxpayers about $2,500 a page if we're lucky. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, really, come on, look, you're not real bright. You can't even answer questions in your own defense. You're paying people for not working while they're in jail. You're misusing money. Hell, at one point, practically extorted the city council about that neighborhood festival. It's like, really, give it up. At some point, the voters need to say give it up. The mayor needs to say give it up. The city council needs to say get it. You know, really, you just save us. You know what? Take the money that you're paying Aubrey Williams, sweep it into your discretionary fund, and help your neighborhood, for God's sake. But
well,
now she's going to burn more money. She's going to burn more money on an attorney. And this is very much money that will not be available to help the people who need the help.
Well, that's it. And, you know, in this particular case, as far as the Ethics Commission is concerned, You know, the first time we really ran into something along this line was what I did with Judy Greene. When I took it to the Ethics Commission and we argued and everything else, you know, Judy Greene was the test case. Judy Greene was the green case, if you will, the new one, that you had to work through. If you're going to have any problems and you're trying to set a precedent and trying to work out the bugs, that was the case to do that. And I've got to be honest with you. Chairman Jonathan Ricketts, he's the chairman of the Ethics Commission, is a guy that I have talked about publicly and worked against in some situations. But this guy truly, as the Ethics Commission chairman, give credit where it's due. This guy does a fantastic job. And there was nothing in this. I watched this hearing throughout to see how it was going to play to compare to the one I did, and to see if we could do anything to change it or improve it. And I'll be honest with you, you know, they did everything fantastic. Barbara Shanklin refused to testify. Judy Greene testified on her own behalf and was found guilty. So I'm sure that's why Barbara Shanklin refused to testify. She wouldn't testify at all. Aubrey Williams actually told her, you know, a couple of times to get up and leave during the hearing so that she wouldn't have to testify or have any answers to all of this. So that was really interesting. But what they got her for, in my opinion, was arguably more than we got Judy Greene for. You know, Barbara Shanklin improperly used Metro Council grants. She gave these grants to the Petersburg Newburgh Improvement Association. They found her guilty of doing that to benefit herself and her family. Barbara Shanklin was the only one authorized to write checks on that account. She wrote 80% of them. You know, 80% of the money was written on checks that she did. She improperly had her own grandson working for her staff. And according to Metro Ethics, you cannot supervise your own family. And that's another thing I think we need to work on now is getting rid of nepotism in government. But we'll have to figure that one out as we go forward. But she was paying him while knowing that he was in jail. So that was an interesting thing. Now, the biggest defense that Aubrey Williams is going to try is to say that the person who actually filed these charges, and thank you, Richard Belisle, because I was going to file them, but Richard stepped up the day before I did. So thank you, Richard, because I'm tired of being the only guy to file anything in this town. But the only thing that Aubrey Williams is trying to say here is he's trying to say that Belisle had no right to file these charges because Belisle, you know, had no personal independent knowledge of Shanklin's wrongdoing. Belisle filed these charges, and he used as part of his charges the fact that all of these things were put out in the Courier-Journal. So he tried to use Courier-Journal article and all the charges brought about from the Courier-Journal, incorporated them into his argument to bring this before the Ethics Commission. You know, I don't have a problem with that. I think that regardless of where you get the information, whether it's a public report in the Courier-Journal or whether you witness it yourself, as a taxpaying citizen, I mean, 99.9% of the taxpaying citizens don't see any of this going on. So when you get that report, a citizen has to file the complaint. The Courier-Journal can't. So I have no problem with that. I think that what Aubrey Williams is trying to do here is set some sort of a standard, you know, that's going to be impossible for anybody to adhere to file ethics charges. Most people can't and don't do the due diligence. They just literally can't, like I did with Shank, or like I did with Judy Greene, or like I did with Jim King and a whole host of others. So I think that Aubrey Williams is going to lose in court, in a real court, if you will, against Belisle on this, because I can't see the court siding with Aubrey Williams trying to impose an impossible standard. What about you?
Well, I think, what he's asking would be fine if there were actual complete transparency and, you know, up to and including the discretionary fund. But obviously, we've seen with Judy Greene and everything, you've got to be able to go in there and dig it up. And people, taxpayers, don't know where to look. You know, they don't know. You know, they could go in and spend all day, every day, snooping around, looking for something. But, yeah, I think sometimes the paper or the media or wherever it comes from. I mean, the greatest impeachment of all time came from a guy flew in two reporters in the basement, you know, in a parking garage, Deep Throat, with Woodward and Bernstein. I mean, you know, let's face it, the paper dug that up. I guess it was okay back then. So, you know, sometimes the media does dig these things up. Now, before you file, certainly you can't submit into evidence, you know, staple a piece of a newspaper to your papers, but you can pick it up. You can go seek out the sources they sought out and verify it. But, how it originates, you know, for him to argue how it originates, well, that's ridiculous.
Well, it really is. And, you know, quite frankly, a lot of times, a lot of things originate from the media. I mean, half the stories the Courier Journal does seemingly originate from me as a source or other people as a source. That doesn't give us the right to tell them they can't write about it. You know, and it's kind of the same thing in this situation. You know, it doesn't matter where the source comes from. You know, we still have to adhere to you know, what happened here. What's the truth? What's not? I don't care if Ed Martin is the one who told me that this happened. You know, if it could be verified and it's proven as a private citizen that's paying these taxes, then there's got to be accountability. So I've got no problem with it. It looked like everything they did here, and again, you know, Chairman Jonathan Ricketts did an excellent job at this. Give the man credit, and you know, I don't see anything happening here that's going to be changed.
I don't see anything happening except the legal costs of the taxpayers going up, and they're in. If you're an ultra conservative, that's just government spending money it doesn't need to spend. If you're a liberal, then that means that the government's spending money on an attorney for a crooked elected official that doesn't get to be spent on maybe cleaning up a park or planting some trees or perhaps helping renovate a house for some poor old woman somewhere.
Well, I tell you, and there's another part of this, too, because I'm glad you brought that up, because part of the other part of this is simple. You know, there was one thing that came about because of this Barbara Shanklin case. The Democrats realized that they're getting caught left and right. And I say that without tongue-in-cheek. I firmly believe this. But Larry Clark petitioned, put a bill up in the House that got passed, you know, that says that local governments don't have to pay these attorney fees anymore. That if somebody brings charges, they have to pay their attorney fees, and like Barbara Shanklin would have to pay her own attorney fees. Now, what this does, and this is the problem I've got with that, I agree with you on the attorney fees. I don't think the taxpayer should be stuck. I don't think the taxpayers should be stuck paying attorney fees. However, what really happens here is by forcing someone like me or you or Richard Belisle or anybody else that brings ethics charges up to pay for attorney fees to prosecute it or to pay the fees associated with it, essentially lets the Metro Council member or the government employee, I don't care which party you are, off the hook. Because most people don't have the money to do that. So what you're doing is you're shutting the table, you know, by bringing on these asinine laws, you're shutting the table down, not allowing us to bring charges because we can't afford to. That's how they get away with it. That's how we get away with it. So, you know, it's just one of those things that I don't agree with. So we're going to work to try to get that overturned in Frankfort next session because it's obviously not going to happen this time. It's over. But we're going to work to get that overturned because I think that, you know, if you're a private citizen – and you're bringing up ethics charges, and you can prove those ethics charges, you shouldn't have to pay squat. And, oh, by the way, you know, the county attorney's office are the ones responsible to represent Metro Council members. So in an ethics commission format, not the Metro Council impeachment hearings, but an ethics commission format, the Metro Council is going to be able to go there, and they're going to have Michael Connell represent them because they're already getting paid to represent them for free. It doesn't cost them any extra money. But you're going to have to pay for a plaintiff's attorney because the Ethics Commission says you have to have an attorney present the case. You know, and in a Judy Green example, I could have done that on my own. I didn't need the attorney that they forced me to take to prosecute Judy Green because I had all the evidence. I could argue the case myself. I'm one of those people, but a lot of people can't do that. So now they put us in a position where we're actually going to get less accountability. So we've got to work on that in Frankfort next session. You know, and it's interesting, too, because we're looking at all these other things going on across Kentucky with taxes, fees, everything else. It's totally incredible to me. But let's switch gears a little bit from Barbara Shank. So here's another nice one in Louisville everybody should love. A proposal was put out last week. Proposal was put out by Louisville Metro Government. I don't know what that background noise is. A proposal was put out by Louisville Metro Government proposing that neighborhood groups will be required to come up with a $2,000 or $3,000 fee when Metro Planning Commission is asked to take up a zoning change in their neighborhood. Essentially what it does, you know, everybody knows that when you're a developer, you got to have approvals from the zoning department to do everything. It doesn't matter what it is, really. And property owners can petition the Planning Commission to schedule a meeting to talk about this. Usually the special meetings are held around 7 o'clock or so somewhere. In most cases, they're held at like churches, fire stations, or something that's close to the site being developed. Well, you know, and anyway, these special neighborhood group meetings are basically set up to make it easier for the neighborhood groups and the citizens to get involved in the process. You know, the normal commission, the normal zoning commission is scheduled as Thursday afternoons, okay? That's when they have their meetings. Well, what's interesting here is the Metro Department of Planning and Design Services, Jim Mims, is saying that it's costing too much money to have these neighborhood group meetings when they request them, when they come in with zoning requests and neighborhood groups want to talk about it. He's saying it's costing too much money. It usually costs $1,200 to $1,500 for a court reporter to come in and record everything that goes on. And then he throws in audio projection equipment, recording devices, all that garbage. So he's saying that if your neighborhood group, who wants to bring the planning and zoning department out to your neighborhood group to have an open meeting on this, that they're expecting you to start paying the cost. What do you think about that?
Well, I think, first off, yeah, once again, it just shows you the inefficiency of government. It's like, really, if you need to record, I can record up to 3 hours on my flip cam. if they want to remove some of the costs, rethink of how you're doing it rather than just shift the burden. I mean, the $1,500 to have a court reporter, well, what for? Is a court reporter more accurate than a video camera? Really? Yeah. Just change the parameters a little bit. Change the requirements and say, hey, you know, put up a camera that that records, and you're good to go. You know,
well, yeah,
everything that's said will be recorded in digital form. It'll all be fine. It's, you know, if you're providing a venue, that's not a problem. And besides, at some point, you know what, they work for us, and that's the thing that I think they forget a lot of times. It's like, no. No, that's what you're getting paid for all the time, you know. So don't just say, oh, well, you know, we're going to sit around and we're going to do this, do that. And, but if you want us to actually come out and work for you, you know, we work for you, well, that's going to cost you. No, I don't think so.
Well, you know, that's the thing, because I think that, you know, they're doing what they can to shut citizen involvement out. Like we just talked about with the Barbara Shanklin ethics thing, they're trying to change the rules there, so citizens can't bring charges about because they can't afford them. You know, we're doing the same thing with planning and zoning, which is going to basically create a runaway field for them to do anything they want to. Stephen Porter, everybody should know who Stephen Porter is. He represents neighborhood groups all over the place, you know, and he says that you shouldn't have to pay to have your opinions heard, because that's basically what this would do, and that's exactly it.
Yeah.
It's going to make it easier for developers. It's going to make it so much easier for developers to get approval of anything they want to do, you know, because the commission, I mean, let's face it, if you have 100 or 200 people show up at a commission hearing, you know, at commission members that are there listening to this hearing, and they're all opposed to a zoning change, that's a hell of a lot of daggone clout to bring to a commission. If you have nobody show up opposed, then by default, the commission members automatically assume, well, nobody really cares, so it's okay. You know, the problem is...
And not only that, but if they're going to start charging for it, well, the only people who are probably going to be able to afford it are going to be the developers. Mm-hmm. At that point, the developers could probably specify what time. And if you, you know, if you schedule it during work hours and you're building in a neighborhood where everybody works...
Right.
You could probably control the crowd by controlling the time, the day, and the venue.
Well, that's it. And that's exactly what they want to do.
If you're paying for it, you get to call it. I mean, yeah, that's great. You know, you pick a neighborhood full of working class people, a bunch of 9-to-5ers or 8-to-4-30s or whatever. You want to get this thing streamlined. There's strong opposition, but you know they're at work. Well, then I think you're going to have a meeting at 11:30 in the morning.
Here's what I think. I think because planning and zoning likes to do their day shift meetings. They do them, you know, up till about 3 or 4 o'clock. Now, the majority of people are at work during the day. They can't take off of work to go to a zoning meeting where they might have to sit for 3 or 4 hours before the particular issue is brought up to talk about and discussed. You know, this is all by design. You get to keep the number of people, the number of involvement down. So if Jim Mims is so worried about the cost and says that it's costing more because they have to have these extra meetings, no problem. How many companies and how many people work second and third shift at a business in Louisville. So, Jim Mims, if you have a problem from Ed Springsteen to you and your corrupt department that you inherited from Bill Schreck and the likes of those like John Flood, the convicted felon you guys put in a county, okay, here's what you do. You change your hours and go to a second shift schedule. Let's go to a 3-11 schedule. Let's go to a 3-11 schedule.
You don't even know it, but you're throwing one right down the middle on me. Because before I went to my accountant today, I actually was trying to pay like this $3 tax bill on an old car that sits in my barn. Place was packed. I actually literally walked up the door a few days ago at 4:31. They closed the door in my face and wouldn't see me. It's like, hey, you know, that's fine. And then I started thinking exactly what you're thinking. It's like, why in the hell is the county clerk's office? Why don't they don't have to be fully staffed. They could be a 12-hour and work a couple flexible shifts. Have the damn places, you know, come on, you work for the people, and the people, I'm sure if somebody's rich and can afford, you know, whatever, they can go in and take care of whenever the hell they want to, or their, you know, if the wife doesn't work or something. But, you know, you got a lot of families, you're right, you got a bunch of families working two jobs, and my God, they're gonna not only pay their taxes if they show up there, or at these planning and zoning commissions, they're going to miss work, so it's costing them money on top of costing them money. It's like, really? Do the barbershop thing. Do banker's hours, you know. Stay open till 7 so at least some people can put in a full day's work so they can have some money to pay your silly taxes and fees.
Well, and that's the whole thing because, you know, even if you look at the division of driver's license, I mean, let's look at this. Everybody's going to get license renewals every year. You know, that's a given. You know, there are so many people who get their license renewed late and take a chance on getting pulled over and stuff because most of those places are closing at 5 o'clock. They've got one day a week where they're open till 6. But how many people get off of work at 4:30 and 5? And if you get there at 5 till 6, you can't get your tags anyway. So, you know, I mean, why not? Why are we not looking at this and saying, okay, if we've got this kind of a problem, then we split the schedule. We have some people work from the 9 to 5 like they do now, and we bring in the other half of the shift and maybe work from a 2 to 10.
Bring some of them in at 6. You can actually stop by before you go to work.
Okay, either or, yeah, bring them in from 6 to 2:30 and then bring the other ones in from 2 to 10:30. If you do a half and half, you're not going to have it.
Or run a full staff. Bring some of them in at 10 o'clock and run them until, you know, whatever, 6 o'clock.
Well, we want to make sure that we don't increase the cost of government because if we do that, then they'll be whining. So we're going to do this in a way that doesn't increase the cost of government. Use your existing staffing, but change your hours around and switch it up. Because what they're doing now is just trying to keep the people from having any kind of, you know, any kind of opinions or anything else. This idea by Jim Mims is ridiculous. And our good friend, Paul Holliger over Stop It, has just pointed out in the chat room that Jim Mims, get this, folks, is a former vendor to developers. Yes. So who do you think he wants to take care of? The same developers who took care of him. So, you know, we've got to start paying attention to this kind of stuff. And Boogie Board, welcome back, brother. He's asking in the chat, we're going to talk about anything relevant to Indiana. My friend, everything we talk about is relevant to Indiana because Indiana's benefit from everything we're doing wrong. You know, besides that, I really try to stay away from Indiana tonight because Indiana destroyed my NCAA bracket when they got beat the other night. So I'm kind of upset with Indiana right now. Just a joke, man. Relax. But, you know, so we've got to start looking at this. You know, we're going to start charging fees for zoning because, well, it's an after-hour zoning meeting, so we have to have all these extra expenses. No problem. Then you extend your hours and make your people accountable to us because that's what we're here for. You know, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to switch over just a little bit to this farce they call Kentucky pension plan that they just put together. I've never seen such a joke when it comes to that kind of stuff in my life. But we're going to check that out. So we'll be right back, folks. You're listening to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Oh, being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters Radio Show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
advertisers. Here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Tell you what, that was an abrupt cutoff. I tried to get it to tone down, and it just went dead. I don't know why. I apologize for that. That's bad for the ears, I know. That was the Eagles, of course, the song Get Over It by Don Henley, and a fantastic song. It talks about everybody whining and crying and moaning and groaning. A lot of what I do on this show, but I don't just whine and cry and moan and groan. I actually do something about it. Just like we're going to do something about the zoning change fees they're trying to get on us, Ed. And here's another thing we have really got to get involved in, my friend. I don't know if you've seen this. I know you've been traveling a lot the last couple of weeks with business, and I don't know if you've seen this. But they did come up with a compromise in Frankfurt to deal with the burden of the pension funding. Did you see what that was all about?
Oh, yeah.
What do you
think
about
that? We're both right-wing and left-wing groups are looking at it, saying it ain't going to work. You know, it's not enough. It's not going to generate enough money. And once again, now you create a two-tiered system. You know, the new employees got one thing, and then they're going to finance it by taking money away from roads, which wasn't that kind of the problem to begin with, that we were so in debt with the pension that ultimately it was going to take money away from roads and infrastructure and all the other stuff, so in order to cover the pension. So, what the hell? Now they're just doing it a little more incrementally on the front end. So, oh, well.
Well, it's totally fascinating because, you know, what they're trying to do is basically is give a tax break to people buying new cars. That was one of the things that really bothered me. They've got a $20 credit that's available to individual tax people that they file taxes, and they've got an additional $20 credit for married couples who file jointly and for each dependent that they claim. What they're going to do is they're going to cut this down to $10. So they're going to cut your taxes by $10, but they're going to give you a tax credit if you buy a new car. Essentially,
yeah.
What they've done is taken $34 million away from highway and road maintenance and hoping to make it up by selling cars. Now, I don't know what kind of a world these people live in. I don't have a clue. But to look at this, to cut back a personal income tax credit, which is actually going to cost you no more money, not give you more money, they're going to close a loophole that the corporations are using to dodge state taxes in some ways. You know, basically all this is a tax increase. So they've increased the taxes, but they've only increased taxes enough to generate $31 to $35 million by any estimate that they say they have.
Yep.
And they need $345 million. So what the hell are these people thinking? Why
yeah,
do we
and that's of course,
are trying
that's
to
of
do
course if the market, that's of course if the market doesn't take a downturn. I mean, it's like you hear on the radio right now, you're saying, oh, Kentucky has 1.8 million taxpayers, and, well, only 1 million of them have sent in their taxes so far. You know, guilty, I'm guilty. But,
well, that's it, and I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, 1.8 million taxpayers, and on the high side, if they don't buy a new car,
mm-hmm.
You're going to generate, what, $36 million off this thing? Something like that? I mean, really?
Well, they're saying up to $34 million.
And then if they buy a new car, well, then they're going to have to pay higher auto taxes and higher insurance on it anyway. And, again, that all predicated on whether the economy stays up or not. I mean, geez. I mean,
it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter.
It's a combination of blatant – I mean, it's sort of a gift to the new car dealers. I mean, it's sort of a subsidy, not much of one. I mean, certainly a $10, saving $10 or $20 on taxes is not going to make me go into debt for a car. But, you know,
well,
explain to me
how we've got a $345 million shortfall, and they're going to make $34 million selling new cars that nobody can afford to buy. I mean, Steve Beshear.
That's if every taxpayer in Kentucky buys a new car.
Exactly. Thank you. And nobody could do that. Most of the taxpayers in Kentucky can't buy anything because they're paying taxes. It's straight because Steve Beshear is the one who put this deal together. He brokered it. You know, and he says he feels confident that the crisis basically has been averted. He says that this reform that he just brokered is going to make Kentucky's pension system one of the healthiest in the country, which is a lie. And he goes on to say that, you know, we've done a heck of a job for the people of the state because it gets a financial burden out of the way. How does coming up with $34 million to combat a $345 million problem that's based on pure gimmick financing and praying that everybody's going to buy a brand new car fix the Kentucky pension crisis that's ranked as one of the worst in the country?
What it does is it gives them something to talk about, even though sure the guy they've got to know it's not going to work. But it gives them something to talk about. They can say, hey, we passed the bill. And as I've said for a long, long time, they'll say they did something. They'll say, well, it's on paper. It looks like it's going to work. They'll all get the hell out of office before everybody figures out it didn't work. And then when they look at somebody and say, well, I don't know. I don't know why it didn't work because we passed it. I mean, why can't the new administration or why can't the new House or the new Senate make this work? We reformed it. It's like, well, you didn't reform it at all.
That's the whole thing.
About. It's something to talk about. It's something that they passed that impacts the taxpayers of the state either $10 or $20 a year, you know, depending on what kind of behavior modification you're actually going to allow yourself to get suckered into.
Right.
And, yeah, it really is. It's pissing in the Ohio River. It's just not amounting to anything. But they can say they passed something.
Well, that's exactly it. And when you look at the reality of this, I mean, let's face facts here. You know, they expect to raise $32.5 million by cutting this tax credit from $20 to $10. So they just said we raised taxes. Thank you, Senate Republicans. I mean, really, because these guys are the ones who always say they're never going to raise taxes. They just did. But then they decided to come up with this asinine gimmick financing that's going to bring them a trade-in credit for new cars. So if you trade in your old car for a new car, you're going to get this other tax credit. It's going to be up to $700, okay? When you look at this, so I'm trying to understand this because Beshear says that there's 600,000 low- to middle-income taxpayers who don't use the personal income tax credit because they've got other credits that wipe their tax liability clean. So you're talking about earned income credit and things like that. So they technically haven't lost anything. Well, in my household, we don't qualify for earned income credit, but we don't qualify to be rich either, okay? We're not making megabucks. We're right above the poverty line, so we don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. You know, but we're not, you know, you can't go out and buy a new car. So they have effectively raised my taxes and putting me in a position where I can't benefit from anything to pay $34 million towards a $345 million pension deficit. Now, I'm sorry. I've got a serious problem here.
It's a $34 billion pension deficit.
I apologize. You're right. I used the wrong
No, it's much worse than you indicated. But, yeah, and by the same token, you go to me. It's like I'm a wear-out instead of rust-out kind of guy. I'm currently driving a 7-year-old car. I can't think of the last time I ever did anything with a car until it was at least 10 years old. I mean, I tend to make it to 10 to 13 years on a car. So this little tax credit thing only applies to me once every decade and a half. So
well, that's if you're in good shape then. And that's if you're in good shape then. I mean, that's the whole thing. Because it's not going to apply to most anybody. I'm driving around a 1998 F-150. You think I go out and buy a brand new one? No. So they've effectively raised my taxes to give somebody who can afford a new car a tax break. Now, that is not the purpose of taxation, an equal share of the burden. And that's the whole thing with this. This is completely crazy to me. And, oh, by the way, this is, you know, just one of those things that Jerry Abramson, Louisville's former mayor that we thank God got rid of, and pray to God he never gets to be governor of the state. But, you know, this is one of the things that Jerry Abramson's so-called tax reform commission was looking at last year, was a way to raise taxes. So they just did. And the Republicans went along with it because they feel like it's painless enough that they're not going to be held responsible. Let's go to the phones. Paul.
Hi, guys.
Good friend Paul.
I can't believe you guys are getting all exorcised over yet another government decision that isn't anything close to what it seems.
Mm.
Now, the good news is most of the people who are in your listening audience, they understand that the government is not the solution to hardly anything. It's the problem. Okay. And what happened down in Frankfurt with the co-conspirator Republican Party, who supposed to be the loyal opposition, if you will, just shows you how bad government can mangle anything. There was a news story out of Texas this week talking about a prosecutor and his wife were shot dead. They were assassinated, and this was just a couple of months after an assistant prosecutor was shot dead.
Now,
just to illustrate the folly of the government and the way government comes up with solutions, the solution down in Texas to deter this kind of behavior was to increase the security in courthouses. Never mind the fact that the assistant county attorney or assistant prosecutor was shot on the streets of this Texas city and the main prosecutor and his wife were shot dead in their home. They decided that it's best to protect the courthouse, even though none of the shootings took place at the courthouse. So anyone who believes that government is the answer, you are definitely relying on a very tainted and warped source as your protector, if you will.
Well, you know, what it also does, it also reinforces what I've been telling everybody forever. You know, a lot of people think that this is a right-wing radio show or something, and I continue to point out the obvious, that this is a uniparty problem, Republicans and Democrats. Here in Kentucky, you know, Republicans have always been accused of not going with any tax increases. The Republican Senate has always been the problem, blah, 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 blah. Well, we know that to be a lie because the Republican Senate just passed Senate Bill 2, which was a mirror House Bill 440, I think it was, that gave them this gimmick financing for pensions. So the Republicans went along with the tax increase too, just as they did at the federal level. So, you know, this is a two-party system problem. Most people I talk
to. And the truth of the matter is, you know what, in a lot of cases, I could actually respect the party if they said, look, we've got a hell of a deficit. We're going to have to find a way to boost the economy, increase jobs. And yes, and with an apology, say, but we're probably going to have to nudge taxes up because these numbers are just damn big. Just throw your way out. You know,
George Bush.
I could respect it if they would say that, but they don't. They say, oh, we're not going to raise
Bush.
Taxes. Yeah, it was like George Herbert Walker Bush, yeah.
It'll never work.
Mm-hmm.
It'll never work because when George H. Herbert Walker Bush ran for office, he told everybody, read my lips, no new taxes. But then when he realized the situation we were in, he came back and basically said, look, you know, I'm sorry, but we have to do this to make it better. And he was chastised for it, didn't get reelected.
Because on the front side he said no new taxes.
Right.
He should have never said that. I mean, it just shows, again, the arrogance. These guys want to talk their talk, but they hell, half the time they don't even have half the facts or half the mental facilities to make a call like that, yet they do it on the campaign trail, and that's what gets them in trouble. I mean, I think the taxpayers would tolerate something, but look, well, we have to raise taxes a little bit, but we swear to you, all of it is going toward this, so we don't pass this crap off on kids. I think people could respect that.
So would you respect this? Let me ask you this. Paul, I want you to weigh on this too, because here we've got the hemp bill, for example, that everybody said would get passed, including me. I didn't think they would do it this session, and they finally did at the last second, They finally got it passed at the last possible second. Jamie Comer, the Secretary of Agriculture, or the Agriculture Commission, agreed with this plan. So they finally got everything done, but Steve Beshear still has not signed that bill. Now, as of April the 6th, if he doesn't sign it or he doesn't veto it, it goes into effect automatically. But what about this? Why can't they say, okay, we're going to pass the hemp bill, we go ahead and start growing hemp, and we take a certain percentage of that hemp money that comes through. I mean, you know, I know we've still got some hurdles to go through with the feds. You know, this is pure logic talking here, what we can do. But let's say we get all this done and we commit 20 to 30% of that tax revenue from the hemp bill to the pensions. That's going to be a hell of a lot more than $30 million. And then you've got it locked in there instead of the general fund for them to go ahead and spend for Rose Gardens.
Yep, and just as importantly, it's new income. So it's sort of, as far as the taxpayer goes, it's a new market. It's new money, so it doesn't represent a tax the existing business for any existing taxpayers. It's new money literally coming from something growing out of the ground.
Well, that's exactly it. But I would never believe their lies like they did with the lottery where they said all that money was going to go to education, and then it went to the general fund, and they allocate whatever they want to education. No, you lock in a certain percentage. This goes to Kentucky Pension Plan.
Oh, I actually have an email record where it's funny, we're on the same wavelength again. I had actually sent that in and said, hey, you know, you want to pass this? I sent it to Comer's office. Saying, yeah, just take it, since it's a brand new revenue stream, just whatever, licensing fees, taxes, you know, if they contract fees, whatever, however they set it up, you know, they put a fee in there, or, you know, a licensing fee to do a field or something, and just allocate all that money straight towards the pension, because it's new money, it doesn't come from the existing tax base, you're literally growing money.
Well, it would also save the taxpayer money, because existing money that's coming out of the general fund that's going to fund the pensions would no longer be needed, so that would open up new tax money for other things, like roads, et cetera, without adding taxes to the people. Paul, what do you think?
You guys are overlooking a very novel solution to all of this issue.
Sure.
Now, growing the hemp, I think, is an excellent idea, but I think you guys are – your focus is kind of misguided. You actually believe that they want private individuals and companies to grow the hemp in order to tax them. Well, we have this $34 billion pension fund deficit. What about this, guys? Why not grow the industrial hemp on state park property right now? And when the feds come in and says you can't do it, they will ultimately confiscate all of that land. Well, in the process of confiscating Kentucky, they get the $34 billion pension fund liability as well. What do you think?
Well, I think...
Damn it, Paul, that's why I love
it. I think after Illinois and California, I think they're going to basically take over the pension fund anyway. I think state pensions are probably on the horizon for the next government bailout. That's what I think.
California has a major state employee pension fund problem right now. And I think I sent you a link. I think I sent you a link on that story. But the city of Stockton, California,
is bankrupt
because of the pension fund contributions that they haven't made and that they owe. So this public employee pension fund program issue, it is a national issue. It is a big national issue.
Oh, there's no doubt. And you look at the other ones that are on the verge. I mean, let's look at Chicago. The teachers went on strike because they wanted all this daggone money and everything else. Now Chicago has to close all these schools because their pensions are 80% unfunded. So they've got to figure out a way to fund their pensions. The teachers are screaming and hollering because they lost jobs because they wanted to get greedy and take all the money. Well, they want their pensions or do they want jobs? I mean, what do you want to do here? So, the pension is the biggest looming thing across America. That is the next major bailout. You know, we talked about that extensively on this show, and last week we covered it in detail as well. You know, but that's one of the things, because I think that these states are sitting here setting it up to petition the federal government for the bailout to bail them out of their own obligations. And California, they've got, what, 6 cities now that have filed for bankruptcy protection? And by the way, speaking of Stockton, the judge did go ahead and rule that Stockton can enter into bankruptcy protection. They had the hearing on that last week. So, you know, it's going to be interesting because that's the next thing that's looming over everybody's head. And what are we going to do about it? You know what I mean? What are we going to do about it?
I don't know. You know, the thing is it's kind of an interesting time because it's fluid, because when you have cities like Stockton filing for bankruptcy, you know they're going to use that bankruptcy to sidestep a lot of their pension obligations. Now, who picks it up or not is, we'll find out down the road. But, it could either be a federal takeover or, this could be window dressing. Like we said, they're talking funding 1% of it and thinking that's going to catch us up. Like, well, sure, how long are you going to live?
Right.
But I think this could just be window dressing, setting it up, just like, Illinois is short paying vendors and stuff like that. I think sometimes they do what they have to do to be able to sort of sell it to the bankruptcy court. Like, oh, look, then ultimately, you think about it, there's a reason that the pension of the lawmakers and stuff is separate from all the other pensions. They're just funded. That way they can get the hell out of there.
This is classic state shifting of problems. Look, guys, all this pension fund stuff is a state issue. So the state politicians, in an effort to make sure that they don't get left holding the bag, they keep kicking the can down the road, knowing at some point somebody's going to have to come to a final accounting. Well, Ed Martin, I think you're right about the final accounting taking place in a federal venue who will exercise the federal power to trim the costs and they will end up scaling back the benefits to the state pensioners, okay? That way, the local politicians will get a chance to say, oh, my God, we did the best we could, but those mean old federal people, look what they did that to you. And we've got a local example of that very tactic being used with the Metropolitan Sewer District and the consent decree. All of these local yokels are saying, oh, no, we're doing this because we were ordered to by the feds.
Right.
They kicked the can down the road.
Well, sure they did. And Birmingham, Alabama, and Jefferson County, Alabama, is a great example of what happens when you enter into these consent decrees. They went into bankruptcy. At the time, they were the largest municipal bankruptcy in U.S. history. And, of course, they've been overdone now by California a couple of times. So, all right, that's it for tonight. Paul, thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it. We are out of time already, Mr. Martin. My, how the time flies by. Final thoughts, my friend.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, this daylight savings time is still looking out the window. It's like, it can't be over. It's still light. I think people, as always, people need to get informed. They need to get outraged. I mean, you're talking about this pension. I've had a 16-year-old daughter that was more ahead of this pension than our lawmakers were. So I think Yeah, I do. I think it's window dressing. I think it's just it's all so they can sit there and say they passed something, and that ultimately, you know, I wouldn't count on this pension. They can't go to the taxpayers. That much they know. But I think they're just trying to buy enough time that they can either let this dude go bankrupt, as Paul said, settle it in a federal venue, or get a federal bailout. At which point, you know, if you're interested in politics, at that time, I do believe that they'll be leaving the ship like rats fleeing a sinking ship. It'd be time to get into stuff. But, yeah, who knows? Maybe they bought a little time. But if the economy tanks and the stock markets that they have to invest in, you know, hey, think about that for a second. State pensions get to invest in the private sector. You know, kind of like the Republicans wanted to do with your Social Security, you get to invest in the private sector. So whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, just stay tuned and watch what happens to the state pensions. But yeah, I think it's all window dressing. I think it's they're just trying to cover up, say they passed some stuff. And somehow, some way, most people in the media are like, yeah, guess what? They passed some stuff. It's like, yeah, they passed a bag full of flaming poop. That's all they passed, guys. They won't work.
I hear you, man. And I tell you what, I mean, you know, that's all assuming, too, that the dollar basically remains the world's currency. And there are a lot of indications to say that's not going to happen for too much longer. When you start looking at the way the markets are going and how they feel about the dollar, how we're printing money hand over fist that we can't back up with anything. You look at deals between China and Russia, and they're making their own deals on oil now without using the dollar currency. What most people don't understand is the dollar is the world's currency. What that means is if China wants to buy oil, they convert their assets into dollars, and then they buy oil from a supplier, for example. They no longer have to do that. They get the majority of their oil from Russia, and they don't have to convert to dollars anymore. They've got their own set of things. So what this does, it devalues the world currency that we call the dollar even more. And ultimately, when that dollar fails, and it will, believe me, what you're going to see is literally 25 to 30% destruction overnight of the U.S. economy. It's gone. There's nothing that's going to happen to stop that. And the path that we've been going down for years has been setting that whole scenario in motion. So assuming that the dollar stays the world's currency, there are a lot of things that we've got to revamp, including these pensions. But the bottom line is we cannot continue bailing out stuff with fake money. You might as well be passing out monopoly money when you're talking about bailouts. There's no reason to be borrowing money from the Chinese to give to North Korea. There's no reason to be borrowing money from the Chinese to give to Iran, because that's essentially what we do, folks. We borrow money to give to the rest of the world, and we pay it back with interest. Those kind of things have got to stop. The American economy is not strong enough today to sustain itself, much less be the world leader when it comes to everybody else's problems. Europe is in crisis right now financially. Cyprus is a great example of that. We ought to talk about that a little bit more tomorrow night, Ed Martin. So gear up. We need to really get into the Cyprus situation. But you look at Greece. You look at all of the things going on in the world today from an economic standpoint. We're not a solid foundation that can help with that. We can't bail out other countries because, unfortunately, we're not even bailing out ourselves. We're borrowing money for everything we spend. We're borrowing more than we spend. That's a scary scenario. Wake up, America, because if you don't, you're going to wake up tomorrow. Your house is going to be gone. Buying a new car ain't going to do you a damn bit of good because you're not going to be able to eat. You can't buy a new car. So you're not going to get a tax credit Steve Beshear wants to get you. For all you union guys and everything else and all you government employees that have these golden parachute pensions, you're going to be the first ones left out in the cold. And you don't even know it. That's the problem. You don't even know it. The private sector has an idea. But the private sector has been paying into their own pensions and 401ks for many, many years. But these government sector employees that are sitting here depending on this golden parachute tax-based retirement plans that are unfunded everywhere are not going to have any retirement at all when it's said and done. And that's the scary part, that they don't even know it. They continue electing the same idiots that are putting them in harm's way. That's it for tonight. We'll talk about more tomorrow night, probably a little bit of Cyprus as well. Ed Martin, welcome back, man. I'll talk to you tomorrow night at 7.
All right, sir.
For the rest of you guys, we appreciate you tuning in. Don't forget to check us out tomorrow night right here on the Ed Springer Show at 7 o'clock. And as always, Sunday through Thursday, 7 o'clock, right here, same time, same channel. Enjoy the rest of your evening. Thank you so much for listening. Take care.